Welcome to Medroom Chronicles. Join nurses and other care providers as they let you in on discussions usually reserved for the privacy of the locked medication room. In this weekly nursing podcast, the filters come off and we tell it like it is. Your hosts, nurses Adrienne Benning and Andrew Craig, are here to educate and entertain on all things in the nursing world. This podcast is intended for nursing students, nurses, nursing assistants, and other care providers. Non-medical folk will probably get a kick out of us too. If you like what you hear, subscribe and share. Happy nursing, folks. Welcome to Medroom Chronicles. This is your host, who never introduces herself, Adrienne Benning. For those of you just joining us, this is actually episode 16, I believe, of the show. And it might be a little scratchy episode tonight because I'm getting over a cold and I sound like a cross between like a frog and Tom Waits. Special episode tonight. We have a special guest. Allison, are you there?
I'm here.
This is my friend Allison, you guys. Allison, I've known for years. And the reason that she's here to talk to us tonight is because she can talk a little bit about this. Not only does she come from a long line of nurses, but she has recently decided to set her sights on the field of nursing and to cross over to the dark side with us. So she is here to talk to us. And Allison, do you want to just tell us a little bit about yourself?
I'm in the pupae nurse, I guess. I'm a proto nurse. I don't know. I'm old, so that's nice. I'm 33.
Welcome.
thank you. It's really good to talk to people of my own age. I work with undergrads all day because I work at a Big Ten library on campus. And so I'm mostly working with undergrads. And so I sort of look at them and think about myself at that age, you know, taking my humanities and social science classes kind of aimlessly. And here I am back at school. I spend all day at school working, and then I go to school at night. So one day go to work again. And it's wonderful.
Yeah. So to kind of get myself in the mood for talking to you tonight, I hope I'm not cracking too bad in the mic.
No, you sound really good. You've got kind of like a sultry golden age Hollywood situation going
on. So we were just talking about this at work the other night. They were like, hey, remember that episode where the episode of Friends where Phoebe gets sick and she has this really like sexy, sultry voice? And then when she gets better, she goes around like drinking out of people's coffee cups and like having people cough on her so she can get sick again. So that's where I kind of am now.
I've had that experience before where I had a kind of a raspy or kind of mucusy voice, I guess, which doesn't sound sexy at all. But I like felt kind of sexy. I felt like I was, you know, Garth Brooks has his, that guy's name? Chris Haynes or whatever.
Yeah.
Like dark alter ego who's just a little bit sexier and wilder. That's how I feel when my voice is all messed up.
So your sexier, wilder self is a little bit mucusy.
Well, yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So actually also at work the other night, because I had to go to work, man. I couldn't keep calling in. Yeah. But went to work, and at one point I was laughing. I had a mask on and everything, and I was laughing, and I realized I sounded like, okay, you've seen Sleepless in Seattle, right? Like a million years ago.
Yeah.
Tom Hanks is dating this woman at one point, and his son like hates this woman, and she has this laugh that's like, oh, that's the laugh I keep doing because my voice can only produce very low and very like high pitched dog noise sounds right now.
Yeah.
Your
respiratory tube is all messed up. I just learned about how that works.
But the thing is, my lungs are clear. Not only have I verified with my own stethoscope, but I've seen a nurse practitioner. So I am on the mend. I'm on antibiotics. The reason I'm on antibiotics is because I got an ear infection from all of this, because I'm an adult that's been getting ear infections for like the last 36 years, basically.
I got them a lot when I was young, and I don't get them anymore.
I didn't for a long time. And I had sinus surgery, like, God, I don't even know, like almost 20 years ago, somewhere in there. Jeez. Can I even say that I did something 20 years ago?
Yeah, but yeah, you can. You totally can. Me too.
So yeah, so, well, but you know, that's an interesting point to note because we both are school thing in my early 30s. It's basically what you're doing. And the thing is that's really common because, yeah, you can go to nursing school right out of high school if you're fucking lucky enough to figure out that that's what you want to do.
Totally.
You know, because, you know, I've worked with people that have in high school, they worked in nursing homes or whatever, and they were like, I can totally do this. Mm-hmm.
Whereas I fled the nursing home after having to go do mandatory visits because we have, I'm kind of an academic person, so I get a little thinky about these things, but we have a really pathological relationship with age. And so, you know, we don't have a healthy relationship with age or with our aged folks who we're not sure what to do with them because we got to go all work because capitalism's terrible. That's the lesson I learned, you know, about long-term care as a kid was just avoid it. Don't go to see great grandma, you know, once a month or whatever, put your time in like prison. And so those kinds of aspects of caregiving were really not,
it's such a broken,
not attractive.
My time spent in long-term care also were not pleasant. We did that for our first semester of nursing school. I agree. I think our relationship with people once they not just the elderly, but also people with high level of physical needs, you know, just the disabled in general.
Absolutely.
They're so like tucked away in these like long corridors and these long-term care facilities. That I could rant on for days. Oh my God, the problem with that. But it's true. Like most nursing students, either they start out working in that setting before they even decide they want to be nurses, or you're like us, where you come about it kind of roundabout. I'll just give I'll give my brief scenario, which I don't think I've done before. I actually kind of came upon this profession totally, I wouldn't say by accident, but it wasn't my doing. I had a friend who suggested I'd be really good at doing home care. So I started doing home care. And then just didn't think I'd get it, applied at this huge hospital. And months later, got a call back for a job, ended up doing this job in a really intense setting for years on end. And then was like, you know what, if I had spent as much time on school as I did at my job, I would have had my bachelor's by now. So I started to the long, arduous road that it took me to actually get
well aware of this road. I was there with you.
And the thing is, and that's the interesting thing is you were with me through all of this. For those of you that can't see what's happening right now,
I think that's sexual assault. Yeah, there's sexual assault.
I'm pretty sure it is. I'm going to have to like out my dog for
not to be glib about sexual assault, but there's no good men.
No, not
at all. Your dog is lumped in with that. So
yeah, my dog is actually about to go in his kennel. So please hold for just a moment.
Okay.
What about now?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there's a button on here. I don't even know how to use this. Here, I'm going to clip this on here.
It's like one of those little IV crimps.
Yeah, totally, dude.
Is that what they're called? I don't know what anything's called. I'm such a poser.
It's just, oh my God, I turned the volume down. I need to stop trying to pin this. It's a clamp. It's just a clamp.
Clamp,
basically, is what it is. So anyway, before my dog so rudely interrupted me with his creepy, humpy behavior. He's two. He's neutered. Why?
Yeah, that's bizarre.
I think it's puppy play behavior. I wonder if that's just something that he used to do with his home bros.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, okay.
Yeah, he's like learning he's learning bad stuff at puppy school. You should go talk to the other parents about their children's bad influence on him.
Actually, his puppy school is so amazing, and I just gave them like a 5-star review because I saved my butt again. My dog goes to the most like bougie, like Portlandia skit dog school ever. They have cubby holes where he can like put his leash and his stuff. Mm-hmm. And he recently was boarded for the first time because we had a little family emergency. But right now he's gonna take a little nap in his kennel because he's being crazy balls. And then
I would just like to say that it is not the school's fault. It's the yuppie parents because they're so bad at it.
It is. It is. Yeah. Actually, Mac's best friend is a tiny little fluffy, adorable dog named Roscoe.
Oh, God.
So Mac and Roscoe, it's too cute. It's disgusting.
He's definitely learning that from Roscoe. I can tell you.
Wait. Yeah. Absolutely. Totally. He's also been playing with a boxer puppy that is adorable. And there are pictures, and Mac just looks like wild-eyed and like crazy, but he has so much fun. Anyway, back to the topic at hand. So I was saying, I took this long route through school. Mm-hmm. And so when I finally decided I wanted to go to nursing school, I tried to get into the nursing school I really, really wanted, couldn't get in. So then I had to, or no. While I was trying to get in, all the prereqs changed. And I wasn't close enough to being done with the prereqs to be like grandfathered in, you know, whatever.
Because they don't care. It's just one less person they have to tell no.
Well, and this is stage. And honestly, this is a competitive program anyway. Yeah, limited number of seats because they have a limited number of faculty, which is a whole other separate problem. Yeah. But yeah, so basically I had to do all those prereqs in addition, and then I didn't get in. So then I was like, well, I got to go to another school. And then I had to do all that school's requirements. And that took me like a whole other year. Mm-hmm. And so essentially I burned up years and years. Oh, and you know, I love my school, but now I'm attending the school that didn't let me in the first place. So I'm like, and you know, I understand that it's very competitive and there were some things that made me not as, you know, sharp of an edge as I could have, but that's because I was in school for so dang long. I took like a philosophy class online and failed it. Yeah. And when I found out I had to go for the second grade option, mm-hmm. I had to retake it at this school that I didn't attend anymore. I was like, I would rather just keep the F on my transcript than to have to go back, re-enroll in a school that I don't attend anymore, mm-hmm. take this one class to get this, you know. So anyway, it was like years of a mess. People that I hadn't seen in years would be like, are you in nursing school yet? And I was like,
just getting ready.
just still working. And I know I work with people right now that are going through that same thing where it's like they get this stutter step, start, stop all the time because they overcome an obstacle and then another one comes up. And it's not like, you know, I don't know much about applying to medical school, but my understanding is you apply to like 25 medical schools. Mm-hmm. You can't do that with nursing. The requirements are so specific. How many CNA hours do you need? How many tests do you, entrance exams do you have to take? What requirements do you have to have? Yeah. You know, like what does your GPA have to be? How many seats do they have open? Do you have funding for this? Mm-hmm. You know, there are other schools in the area I could have looked at, but I would have been paying like $20,000, $30,000 a year. Yeah. College is like a sliver of that. Yeah. So I'm proud to say that I went to a community college, and while there were flaws, I feel like I got a solid education, and that coupled with my job, I came out, I feel like, with a really solid footing. I had a rough start because of anxiety as a new nurse. But in terms of like my skill level and abilities, I came out pretty solid. So I got to give a shout out to my, you know, 2-year programs that are putting out really highly qualified nurses. So
yeah, I will say like I learned a lot from you watching you go through that experience.
What so, not to do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess the takeaway for me was largely like it is absolutely your responsibility to have all of your ducks in a row. No exceptions will be made for you. And these are the kinds of schools that are designed to educate you. And number one is community college. Those are the schools that are designed for adults to like maybe do something else. And whether that's the actual nursing program or the prerequisites, you know, I work at a Big Ten school and they're not designed for normal people. They're designed for an 18-year-old who's going to university and they're getting an undergraduate degree. And even their nursing programs, like undergraduate level nursing programs, are really not for people who aren't already in the system, well into the system, if that makes sense. And yeah, I feel like absolutely. That was true of your first choice school as well. There's very little provision or space made for people who are kind of non-traditional.
Yeah. And, you know, as a non-traditional student, I felt like, you know, a lot of people can say that they've been CNAs for a long amount of time, but like I was not like, oh, I was special, but I feel like I'm not alone, but there's this category category of people that are coming into the industry that have been in the industry for years. Mm-hmm. Either they've worked in a hospital for, I worked in a hospital for a decade by the time I got my nursing license. Or people that literally are basically running nursing homes when they're like 19 years old because they started there at 16 as a CNA and they know the residents and the system so well that they can just run the place basically. And so I'm not saying that there are like places run by, you know what I'm saying? Like there are people that are highly competent because of their experience and not just their education. And so then when you're trying to apply to nursing school, they're looking at, for example, they're looking at your GPA. Well, yeah, you can look at my GPA, but also take into account that I have like 2 years worth of classes that have nothing to do any medicine, you know, anything that applies to the, my ability to process this information that I'm learning now. Right. And the fact that I took an art class that I didn't finish like 15 years ago, like I don't, and I can't not send those transcripts because I also have like my A and A&P one and two. So I, and so you can't pick apart your transcript, but it's like, I've been in school for so long because I didn't know what I wanted to do initially. I originally enrolled in college in 1999 as a business major. Yeah. Like I didn't know what I was doing. I came from a preparatory college prep high school and I thought that was what I was supposed to do.
Right.
I got this job on accident because a friend was like, hey, I think you'd be really good at this. And then it, she turned out to be really, really right.
Yeah.
And so I don't have anyone in my family that has, you know, a medical background. I don't have any nurses in my family, but you do, right?
I do. I have, well, my grandmother was not a nurse. She was, so she worked, my grandmother, who died quite a long time ago, but she was kind of like that really interesting era of medicine when it was really pretty unregulated. The era in which my grandmother, who would have been born in like, oh my gosh, let me do the math, maybe like 1925. So the era in which she worked in hospitals, she was like, she was not a nurse. She was a cleaner, but cleaners also did like some CNA stuff and some nursing stuff, basically. Like it was very kind of unregulated Catholic hospital. So my grandmother, like, she wasn't really a nurse, but people kind of thought of her that way, I guess. And my aunt's a nurse on that side of the family. I have a couple of other nurses on my other side of my family, one of which who has since, who died a couple of years ago of cancer. One of my aunts, actually my my kind of honorary godmother, is a nurse at this magnet hospital in my hometown. And so anytime anybody in my family is sick in that hospital, we, you know, she doesn't violate HIPAA by looking them up, but we let her know and she goes and visits and she makes sure that they're, you know, kind of like getting,
that they're taken care of.
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, the other nurses in my family, whether it be one of my aunts or, you know, I have a cousin in nursing school now, they're like, I feel like you could measure this, you know, like having a nurse who's directly related to you, whether that's like in your immediate family or maybe your cousin or somebody who's even just your friend. I feel like you probably have an extra 5 points in life expectancy because of like, the ability they have to like advocate for you if they care about you, if they're around to advocate for you, explain to you what's going on and make sure that like kind of things are going right. I feel like they're not, nurses aren't just caretakers of people. They're like caretakers of care. If that makes sense?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because, does that sound insane?
Yeah, because, no, because they know that the American education, or the American educational system, that too, but that the American healthcare system is complicated and that health literacy is really low. And not, health literacy is not just understanding how your body works, but it's understanding how to get the care that you need in the time that you need it. And so nurses also, when you have a nurse that's, you know, in some proximity to you, they can either be like, go to bed and drink a lot of water, or they can be like, oh honey, you hang up the phone now and go straight to the ED. You know, like you've got that person who can kind of be like your filter. And there's that, you know, there's that joke that if you're like the child of a nurse, like you don't go to the doctor unless you're dying. But also I think nurses are, as parents are better able to be like, okay, this is not an emergency. We're not going to make it one as much as we'd like to. I guess, even though I didn't have a nurse that pushed me towards this profession, like the woman who encouraged me to do home care. She worked in home care. Mm-hmm. So she had spent years, you know, taking care of people with physical, emotional, mm-hmm. mental disability. So I guess kind of come by it by way of like the people around me. So
yes, I feel like by the time I graduated from college in early January of 2008, I did like an extra fall, you know, semester. By the time I graduated, a lot of my friends had already done home care work, in the area. And because it was like, you know, the recession was happening, people needed to get jobs right after, you know, graduating. It was a terrible time to find any kind of job. And that was one of the things you could, you know, you could do if you thought you were up to it. But at that point, I'd heard so many horror stories of people being terribly assaulted or having, you know, really poor ratios, which isn't that funny now that I'm sitting here with you in a nursing podcast. But
yeah, no, it's true. It's
but
true.
It scared the shit out of me. Like home care seemed like it seemed really dangerous and like really something that I just wasn't really wanting to commit to because I didn't think I could. I didn't think that at the time that would work for me, you know?
Yeah. And I think that at the time,
and these are group homes, by the way, not individual, you know, care of disabled folks in their home. So different kind of home care, group homes.
Yeah. There are agencies all over the country and especially, you know, in this area that, have, different levels of need, but they're home-based. Like when I got my start in home care, I took care of three women varying in age from like school to, you know, mid 20s. They had one of them had physical disabilities, one had mental or intellectual disability, and then another had some behavioral issues. So it was kind of like a grab bag of responsibilities for the caretaker, but I basically was to like pick them up from school and their day programs, take them home, help facilitate normal living, help them make dinner to the level of their ability, do personal cares, homework if necessary, that sort of thing, and then help them all get ready for bed, and then in the morning help them all get up, do their morning routine, get them off back to their programs or their schools. And so I look back at that and I learned so much, but I was so ill prepared. And the reason these jobs are easy to get and these jobs are filled by people who need a job. And some of these people are empathetic, kind of, you know, qualified individuals. It's a good, I took an anthropology of caregiving class, and this is why we see so many immigrants working in home care, because experience taking care of another person. It's like that human service industry. Mm-hmm. It's a skill that translates regardless of what country you're in, what language you speak. Like everybody eats the same way, basically. So, like you said, you see a lot of people who are just desperate to get a job because these jobs are so needed and fruitful. They don't pay very well, and there's lots of these jobs, and the turnover is really high. And sometimes you are in situations. I've worked in homes where they then, while I worked there, fortunately I was never hurt, but they decided like maybe we need to have no female staff at this house. Not as a point of sexism, but because like there were issues with sexual abuse in the house, you know, they just needed people who were really, really big and strong in that house. So it does vary. Where I worked, had zero threat of violence with any of my clients. However, when I started floating and working in a number of houses in the community, getting to know all of these residents, I was exposed to violence. And once it was by myself in a unsafe situation. And so it wasn't the fault of the company. It's just that there are more people in need than there are people to do the work. So now
the lovely GOP government of Iowa, if I can be political, is gutting. I heard an amazing piece on NPR. I live in Minnesota, for those who don't know, which why would you know? I live in Minnesota now, but I lived in Iowa for a long time, just how I know you. And the GOP government of Iowa, there was a great piece on NPR the other day about gutting the Medicaid reimbursement rates and all this other stuff for home care. And I mean, they can't fill these jobs at $10, $11 an hour in Iowa, which is really something because wages are low there and people need work, especially in rural areas. Uh-huh. They can't even, you know, they can't even fill them at 10 or 11 with people who aren't, I mean, really, really unqualified and really uncommitted and unprepared, uneducated, all that stuff, let alone now they're going to have to fill them at $8 an hour because they're going to have to shave it down, and they're going to have to actually shave down the face time that the caregivers are going to have with people, which is, it's just, it's unbelievable,
you know. And
it's uncivilized and disgusting, and I don't know how you can call that a civilization.
No, and that's just the thing, is that the people, I become almost speechless about it, because some people that listen may know that my partner Douglas, he works in disability care. He works in a day program. It's kind of like a school for adults with varying levels of disability. When you're seeing cuts that are this deep, you're seeing people's changes in people's programming, which affects, it's not even like on the grand scale, it's people like needing services to help them work towards independence and living quality lives. But when you get down to it, like down to just the micro level of individuals, it fucking determines how many hours a day they're allowed to leave their house because mm-hmm. they have someone who gives a shit enough and is getting paid enough mm-hmm. to be there to help them leave their house for a few mm-hmm. hours. Like the isolation and the consequences. Oh, I'm getting super croaky because I'm getting all worked up. The funding people are losing, like, it's not like what Fox News wants you to believe, where it's like a bunch of lazy people on welfare. These are people that, like, that cannot live without community around them. And instead, we have people saying, you are not worth the extra money, but we're going to take that money and put it somewhere else. It has nothing to do with the quality of people's lives. Right. I don't want it to become
about people. We need people's bank accounts to have more zeros behind them, because that's super critical.
Yeah.
Meanwhile,
people are picking and choosing which of their prescribed medications they're going to fill that month because they don't have money for all of them. Or they're just not taking medications. Like, I've seen patients in the hospital that end up in the hospital because they stop mm-hmm. taking their very necessary medications, and they end up in the hospital because then they have some consequence of not having those meds. And then they're racking up a massive bill in a hospital because they couldn't afford their prescription. Really?
That's right.
What's more expensive? And then also another thing, I just burped on the episode. The power of the delete button. Another thing that, oh my God, I lost my train of thought because I burped twice and now I don't remember what I was saying.
I'm talking about people not taking all their medication.
Well, another aspect of it that I've seen a lot lately that really is bothering me is that we have people that are charged from inpatient. They, they have no medical reason to remain in the hospital, and yet we can't discharge them because they're not well enough to go home, or they don't have a home.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Because they were living in a facility or a skilled nursing facility, or can't go home because now they have a different level of ability than they did before and it's not safe. Mm-hmm. But anyway, then, you know, if you don't have good insurance, you end up sitting in the hospital while the bill climbs, and while beds remain unavailable to people who need them, and nurses are taking care of patients who don't really need anything. We just give them their meds and they do their thing because they can't leave, because they can't get coverage for the care they need. Mm-hmm. They can't get the home oxygen they need. They can't get a walker. They can't get a home health nurse. They can't, whatever it is that they can't get that they need to be able to leave. So we have all these people that are spending extra days and weeks and sometimes even months mm-hmm. in the hospital because Medicaid, Medicare, whatever, it's been cut.
Yeah.
There's no more money.
This is
Sorry,
one
we, don't,
of,
we don't cover that anymore.
This is one of the things that I have always loved the most about nurses. And this includes like my aunts and just people I've known who've been nurses throughout my whole life. You know, many family friends, current friends, all that stuff. And reflected even in, you know, a week ago, I went to an information session about a graduate program that I'm, you know, considering applying to for an, you know, an entry level degree, but for people who already have a bachelor's degree. And the head faculty member who did the presentation went on a completely, probably inappropriate rant about how it's complete, you know, how it's, how the health insurance situation is garbage. And we should have universal coverage vis-a-vis, I think she was getting at single payer. But this was in a, you know, a private school graduate program for, you know, all people from all walks of life coming to see this. And she just kind of went for it. She was like, look, if you don't already realize this, this is just how it is. And it's terrible and it's a failure and we need to fix it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
and I just like that kind of like, there's this thing about nurses that I've always admired. They just like, when you do that work day in and day out, you are always kind of living in the real world. You are always living with real, tangible life, death, facts on the ground, you know, realities that people are living with. You understand how the stuff at the top affects this, all the people kind of on, you know, on the ground day to day. And most nurses I know don't beat around the bush when it comes to kind of critiquing the delivery of care in this country, which is just appalling. And I mean, it's wonderful. I mean, it's not wonderful that it's terrible, but it's wonderful that in a profession like that, the people really doing the work, I mean, they know what's going on. They're so aware of what's going on and they really care about fixing it.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's why you're seeing a lot more. So, for example, a lot of nurses don't know this. I assume they do this in every state, but they do Nurse Lobby Day. And every year nurses go to the state house, But there are ways that people, that nurses need to be involved like every step of the way. The hospital that I work in, Magnet Hospital, very high standards for nurses. We want to make sure we're meeting our Magnet standards. We've been recertified a number of times or remagnetized, whatever the word is. But you know, we're, our focus is not just on, you know, research, which is a big component here at the university, but it's about quality improvement, evidence-based practice, nurses having direct hands in this. They want you on committees. They want your voice. They want you speaking up because you're the end user. You know, you're the video game tester for healthcare.
That's right.
And so I feel like more and more nurses need to get involved. I, as goals for this year, am looking to be involved. It is the end of the year. I'm kind of in crunch time. So yes, I'm working to get my butt on a committee before the year ends. I've already inquired about it. I just need to do it. Why it's so important. Nurses are not only being active like in their state houses and in committees at work, but you see more and more groups on Facebook, nursing advocacy groups, communities that are calling legislators. And
this year, I'll just put in a thing because I'm like a pretty active kind of, I guess, agitator on the left. I'm really a big activist in my union. One of the things I'm aware of is that actually for the 2018 midterms, for people who are listening, who are nurses or who might live in any of the states, there are more nurses running for Congress in 2018 than ever before. So find out who they are, research them and vote for them. How good would the world be if nurses were like, if the legislature was made of nurses?
there's some, I don't remember where the quote came from, but it's like in the back of my mind, someone was like, if nurses, school teachers and farmers ran the world, we'd be so much better off. I'd also like to point out that with the exception of farming, which is still very, very much a woman's profession, nursing and education are very, very typically women's fields. Right. We've been kind of shoved into those fields since the dawn of women being allowed to do anything at all outside the home. So I say to you, if teachers and nurses were running this shit, everybody would have some medicine and some good advice on what not to eat.
Yeah.
And then they'd send you down to the farmer, some stuff that's not sprayed with fucking chemicals.
Okay. And if you lie in Congress, your nurse colleague will just tell you that you're lying.
Yeah, also. Because here's the thing. As nurse,
like, that's actually not true. You're just not, you're not taking your medicine. I can see.
Yeah.
You're not taking the medicine of truth.
Clearly,
you're clearly delirious by whatever force it is that
we clearly have evidence-based practice that these tax cuts will not benefit anybody. So
well, and that's just it. So yeah. I feel like there are so many things that I haven't even been a nurse for that long. What are we going on? Let's see. So
and a half years?
That's 16. So I've been a year 16 and a half. Months.
Yeah.
16 months. Okay. So I 16 months have seen so many things that are messed up about our healthcare yeah. system that I would love to fix, but the balls are so slow to get rolling. Yeah. It doesn't mean that we can't do it. We just all need to be kind of focusing on the same things. Are a relentless force. Like, look at the not my stethoscope response. Do you guys remember? Why is that nurse wearing a doctor's stethoscope? And the whole, like, all 3 million nurses in the United States were like, say that to my face.
Right?
And also, doctor on YouTube. After some of these tragedies and disasters that have happened has gone on the horn and has been like, if you all give $1, that's $3 million. Come on, nurses, give a dollar, 3 million, you know? Yeah. So yeah. It's like, we are a large group and yeah. that doesn't even include pupa nurses like yourself, right. and all of the people that kind of surround us, family member, you know, I yeah. know that. But I have family and friends that are more aware of how their health is being affected by mm-hmm. legislation and whatnot because, you know, they're surrounded by nurses that are talking about it. So,
speaking of 3 million, the Minnesota Nurses Association, which is kind of the statewide most kind of common statewide union for your average hospital union or whatever to be tied into. Mm-hmm. With the National Nurses Association, but the MNA, the Minnesota Nurses, they raised, I think it was somewhere between $2 and $3 million over the last mm-hmm. couple of years. And they used that money to write off the medical debt of 2,500 Minnesota families.
That's incredible. I did yeah. not know that.
And there's a couple of other statewide unions that have been doing that because they view that as, you know, they do work to advocate for patients and themselves inside the hospital, but they also view that as kind of holistic healthcare, right? Like getting rid of this thing, this debt hanging over people that is going to make them sick.
Yeah. And, you know, also having that debt affects your ability to continue to get care.
Correct.
Because if you owe a hospital X number of dollars, mm-hmm. at some point, especially if it's like a private institution that you're going to, they're going to say at some point, like, your credits run out. Like,
yeah. And I think there's just that weathering. It's the word weathering. Do you know this word weathering?
No, talk to me.
The word weathering means the day-to-day and by day-to-day, then kind of year-to-year wearing down of you.
Oh, yeah.
Mentally, mm-hmm. physically, socially, emotionally, that happens, you know, kind of depending on where do you live in the intersectional praxis of oppression.
Yeah.
So there, you know, it's the high blood pressure among African-Americans by the time they're, you know, really, really quite young. All these things that kind of build up. Anyway, poverty... The blood pressure in African-Americans is just the easiest example I can point to. Those are really, really disparate health outcomes that just can't be explained by poverty or, you know, any odd thing. It's like this weathering effect. The weathering effect of debt and poverty because you went to the doctor because you got sick is real. And so that was kind of the motivation of the MNA was, to, you know, 2,500 families is nothing to shake a stick at.
No, and also, you know, it's true. Like, stress has, we've already, medical science has already proven.
Corticosteroids. I just learned
that. That cortisol, high levels of cortisol yeah. over long periods of time is bad for your body. No, it's yeah. true. And I have a very long 36 years, many of which we struggled through poverty. Like, you know, I grew up, my parents busted their ass to give me what I did, what I had. And I had a lot of benefits and luxury, but also there were periods of time where like we did without the utilities being turned on for a few days, you know, because we just didn't have the money or, you know, whatever. That kind of stress. I think about the things, well, and even thinking about my own stress, living as a single adult in the world, this is not something that's a, you know, not a topic that people can't relate to. Just being like, oh my God, I don't have my rent money and the clock is ticking down. Like, do I donate blood? You know, do I donate plasma for money? Not donate blood. That is still something that people.
It's still wonderful to give the plasma. I just think it's like a transaction that people because they have their, people are literally selling their body, you know, to like make rent. And so I think that's, I don't mean to be such a didactic academic, but I think words are really important and people are like selling their body parts to like pay for their electric bill. That's sick, you know? But also we need the plasma. So go donate it.
It's true. It's true. And it's a good incentive. Like, I'm sacrificing of myself. You can give me a little bit for my time. Sure. Like, it sucks. I want people to just donate altruistically. But also, when I first moved to Iowa City, I used the money that I got selling plasma to buy toilet paper. I'm not even kidding. There is a certain,
I might do that when I'm in grad school and I don't have any money. So,
look at sperm donation. People sell their sperm. Women sell their eggs. Granted, they have to go through like horrible fertility bullshit. Not something I'm willing to do. And I don't think the extraction is very nice.
I don't think they want my eggs. So that's fine.
My eggs are all dried out and like angry.
I'm drinking some French wine right now. They don't want my eggs. Okay.
I have to refill. I have to refill my glass at some point. Okay. Yeah. So we can agree on all of this. We can agree that we're not going to fix it tonight.
Nope.
But that the biggest people that need to be speaking up are nurses, because we know the system. We see it happening not just with our patients, but their family members. Like, you're much more in tune to what grandma's going through when she like doesn't want to get a hearing aid, and then you find out that that's because the hearing aid costs $3,000,
right?
And these are people that have worked their whole lives. What the hell did they work for?
What the hell
did they bust their ass for? And even worse are like the women of that generation that didn't work their whole lives. And you know, they have to rely on the money that came from their spouses if they had one. We're not going to fix the world. I want to redirect.
But the point is just that I've never seen a group of people, you know, it's hard to group a lump of people because everybody's not a monolith, but.
Right.
But nurses as a professional group, as a force in society, I don't know of any group that I admire more and want to be a part of more. And that's why I view their work as essential, and you know, there need to be more nurses. I'm familiar with the work, not entirely, obviously, but it's worthwhile work, and it's work I want to learn how to do, you know?
So I want to talk a little bit about your experience. From the point at which you sent me a text message that was like, guess what I want to do? In that moment, which I went, fuck yeah, we got another one.
I tricked this bitch.
You know what? I think it's just the opposite. Not only did I not trick you, but I gave you such a clear picture of what you're getting yourself into that when you said you wanted to do it, I was like, oh, she ain't kidding. People don't kid around about this. People don't listen to my poop stories and go, it's like an interesting career.
Pretty fun on a Tuesday.
You know, it stuck with me. And I've said this to Doug a few times in jest, but really it's not that much in jest. I think you actually said this to me at one point. The Allison in her prime is like a high level dermatologist that doesn't really have to see the bowel impactions or crown fractures. You're just kind of there to be like, we're gonna you're gonna have a parking space and an office, a private practice. It'll be fine. It'll be
I can do the dirty work, but I don't want to do the dirty work forever. So my goal would be to eventually become like a primary care practitioner, nurse practitioner. Cause I do feel the drive to be kind of a leader in the clinic and, you know, be providing a lot of care to people.
And I think that that's well suited to you. You have the personality mm-hmm. for it. That's the thing that everybody says about
nurses. Whoa, shady.
No. What I'm saying is, I'm saying that
I can't say all this, Adrian, because we've been friends for a really long time. Just in case anybody's wondering.
No. Our dynamic is so like there are boundless, no limits. Sometimes to a fault. but I guess what I'm saying is because of your I feel like you're a natural advocate. You mm-hmm. do a lot of union work. Mm-hmm. You're not a nurse and you've been out picketing with striking nurses who want safe ratios and enough money to justify like getting punched
and shit on and
abused and yelled at by family members and talked shitty to by God knows who. Mm-hmm. So I feel like you're kind of a natural advocate. I also feel that because you are very educated and you have a high literacy level, that doesn't mean that you're only going to talk to like stuffed shirts, like in kind of way. I think you have the ability to talk to any audience. Mm-hmm. By the way, my TV just kicked off and it kind of scared me.
It's really dark now. There's a strange thing happening in your room. I don't like it.
Yeah. So I'm going to turn it back on. Sorry for the interruption to the flow of thought. here, we're going to turn a light on because all of a sudden I'm creeped out. There we go. Good Lord.
Yeah, I mean, so even though I'm kind of like an academic, you know.
I think you're a natural leader.
I'm from a very normal, like working class Iowa family, not rural, you know, kind of Rust Belt style. But I mean I you know, took care of my dad when he had his knee replacement. It was horrible. Not because taking care of people is horrible, obviously I don't believe that, but it's my dad. So I can translate and have, you know, be in the room with, you know, with all kinds of people. I feel like I'm a bit of a chameleon. I work in academic Big Ten, you know, university library, but I'm from, you know, a lot of people who don't even read books. So, you know, I always span what I would call kind of a wide spectrum of American culture.
Yeah. And I think
that's really helpful.
It's incredibly helpful. It's basically just that ability to be able to talk to anybody mm-hmm. in really awkward circumstances.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
No, in nursing, after a certain number of years as a nursing assistant on a neuro unit, people used to, like, I am very much an introvert. I've been an introvert my entire life.
Yeah.
And people were like, no way, you're not an introvert. And I'm like, no, my job working on neuro has made me able to talk to anybody, because when you're trying to reason naked old man to why he shouldn't do whatever it is he's about to do that you caught him doing, it gives you the ability to go, you know what, if I can talk to this guy, I can handle anybody.
Yeah.
Like life and death become such an appreciation for you. Yeah. And even things as simple as like having your wits about you mm-hmm. become such a blessing that suddenly you're like, being an a-hole right now, I'm glad you're okay. Like,
absolutely.
I mean, I still kind of, some people I'm kind of like, well, I'm an asshole. But for the most part, I'm just like, you have no idea how bad it can be. And I have to forgive you for that.
Totally.
Like, I think that it takes a special kind of person to be a nurse. Everybody says that, but it takes a special kind of person to be all different types of nurses. Mm-hmm. I could never work in pediatrics. I just know I couldn't. But geriatrics, for the rest of my career, I feel like everybody kind of has that niche find. Yeah. Do you feel like you're wanted to be like a practitioner away from the bedside at a certain point, because there's only so many years you can handle that shit? If you had to pick a specialty right now, what would you pick?
Well, I feel really good about the fact that people understand that I don't know that yet. You know, because most nurses will tell you like, yep, it takes some time in school, or, you know, most people don't go in, like, just like most people don't go into college itself knowing what they want to do. But I'm definitely comfortable with pediatrics. I actually worked with elementary school kids for a while after I graduated from college. I worked, kind of as a teaching assistant in a mixed ages elementary school. And I loved that. And I am not really a kid person in the sense that, you know, I don't hang out with kids a lot. I don't, like, you know, live and die by the idea of having kids, but I really liked working with kids. And I think kids really excel when we talk to them like they're not dumb. And that's actually true for lots of groups of people. When we talk to them with really, like, affirming kind of common human respect, that really benefits them and it works well. So I could work with kids. I'm really interested in well woman care and reproductive rights. So I could see myself working at Planned Parenthood. I could see myself, you know, working in OBGYN, you know, L&D, whatever that would be. I could see myself working in hospice. Cause actually, you know, kind of one of the things that got me more interested in becoming kind of an officially educated kind of caretaker in the medical world is I've had a lot of family members die in the last few years. Life was not as serious to me before. Like, I know that you know, everybody goes through, like, serious losses of family members at kind of certain points of their life. And for me, it really didn't happen until my late 20s, early 30s. For some people, it's earlier. Some people, it's later. Some people are spared a horrible family death until they might be 40 years old. Some people, super young. Not to go on about that.
No.
But, you know, for me, it happened within the last couple of years. I had, you know, a spike in deaths of people really important to me. One of whom was my aunt, who was a nurse. And it made me really think more about, like, what am I doing? You know, what does it mean to be, what does it mean to be a family member? What does it mean to be a member of society? What does it mean to, like, contribute? Is my office job really giving me that much sense that I'm contributing? Could my skills be used better? Should I finally commit to a career? Because that's the thing that I haven't done, you know?
Yeah.
And I won't go into the more traumatic aspects of it, but it really, like, it made me take life and death issues more seriously and evaluate what I wanted my relationship with that stuff to be. And a lot of people I know become nurses or whatever kind of healthcare provider after they go through stuff like that. You know, absolutely. I know somebody who had an amazing hospice nurse for their mom, and deeply inspired them so much that they became a hospice nurse. You know, other stories like that. Awesome. And I kind of relate to that, not in a specific field, but I kind of feel like it's kind of my, you know, for, you know, I've been taking prereqs now for what, a year and a half or so. And so I finally kind of has become my time to kind of double down and commit to that.
Yeah. I think that that's really a common story.
Also, as an aside, I'll add that when I was younger, I considered doing nursing when I was an undergraduate, but I really enjoyed just, like, reading poetry and getting stoned. And that was easy. I mean, it was so easy. It would have been way more difficult to take anatomy, you know, at the U or whatever. I would have had to actually, you know, and I did very well in school, but I took things that were casually interesting and I could casually get A's in. Do you know what I mean? And it was kind of a fun time for me to just be kind of a, you know, like a wild teenager, I guess.
I had a few semesters like that.
but what was I going to say? I was going to say, I know. But I really thought, I don't think so, because I don't want, you know, I've grown up around all these nurses. I don't want to work with doctors. Oh my God, they're such jerks. They're horrible. You know, they're so demeaning and they're so kind of disrespectful and they're so kind of, toxic. And then I got jobs where there's always people like that. So I realized that there's just always going to be, there's always going to be somebody who's more powerful than you, who's terrible. And so you just have to kind of pick amongst and you that.
Like, and
I ended up working with faculty at a giant university. Oh, I wonder. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I, one of my biggest fears coming out of nursing school was talking to physicians because I was like, are they going to think I'm dumb? Am I going to know what to say? Am I going to ask the right questions? Am I going to tell them the right things? Because in nursing school, they teach you the system of communication, which basically makes sure that you're delivering information in a way that makes sense and that you're not missing any pieces that the physician needs to make decisions.
Right.
And actually, while I have come across a few bad apples, I feel very proud. And maybe it's not like this everywhere. I feel like they are my teammates. We have physicians, maybe I'm especially blessed because we have doctors, like, for example, before it gets too late at night, they'll come around and they'll walk up to every single nurse on the unit and ask them if they need anything and if their patients are okay.
What?
And that is some, yeah. He is a staff physician. He has been there for a million years. We have another doctor who, oh my God, I wish I could describe him because he's like, he's kind of like a cartoon character, but I love him so much and he's so good. Okay, I'm going to describe him and then I'm going to cut out his description because Allison, you are going to love this description. That concludes my description of him. So now we're back in the recorded conversation. But
yeah, I mean,
like,
it's funny because, you know, all along, you know, I've come, you know, I've worked in all these different environments. And, you know, having not committed to a career, I've never gotten a graduate degree. You know, I just have like a general, you know, humanities, social sciences, liberal arts, you know, whatever degree. So I've always kind of been at the more of the entry level at jobs, you know, wherever I've been. I mean, I have a lot of skills, obviously, you know, I have a decent job, but that hierarchy exists in every industry, every place. And in every place I have absolutely been able to competently maintain, you know, good relationships with the so-called kind of the doctors, you know, of the different kind of places I've worked, who would kind of like, you know, represent that power dynamic, that kind of like, I don't know what you would call it, that kind of dominant presence. I've been fine. It's been fine. And I know that it will be fine in healthcare too, you know?
So that
barrier is kind of gone for me, I guess.
So you're not so afraid of that thing anymore. But also, you know, the shift in healthcare is very much towards that multidisciplinary team.
Yes.
Where everyone from the nursing assistant to the staff surgeon, they're all working in collaboration for the same, they all have to be on the same page with kind of the same goals in mind. And so it's true that anyone who interacts with your patient is a set of eyes and ears for their situation. Like, for example, I tell people that their nursing assistants are their best allies. I tell nurses that their nursing assistants, patient care techs, whatever you call them, because think about how many times they wipe your patient's butt. To you, that might be a demeaning task that you don't want to do, which if it is, to nursing, not for you.
Yeah.
Because when you are wiping a patient's ass, that is not demeaning. You are assessing their skin. You're assessing their digestion. You're assessing their stool.
That's right.
You're talking. So there's so much information that you gain from just doing those tasks that you may or may not feel are like beneath your level.
Right.
So I think that it's important. And I've even had physicians that like, I'll be doing something for a patient and the doctor will say, well, I'm just going to stand here for a second and see how they do. Like, for example, if they're about to drink something, the doctor might be like, I'm just going to chill here for a minute, see how it goes. And in that case, like that doctor is like relying on your assessment, your interaction with that patient. And oftentimes if I have patients that are like not listening to me, but they want me to talk to the doctor or they want to hear from the doctor because they don't think I know what the hell I'm talking about. They think, you know, especially in older generations, or people that don't have have much exposure to healthcare. And what I say to them is, I will happily page your doctor for you, but I would just like you to know your doctor is making a lot of decisions based on my frequent assessments of you. So,
and that's funny. I actually work in this model right now, but our patients don't know it. So I work in an academic library and I work on the desk. We frequently have people who come in and they go, are you a librarian? Are you a librarian? Can you help me find the information I need? Well, I'm not technically a librarian, but if you hadn't asked me that, I'd probably get it done for you. But I work in conjunction with the graduate educated information professionals, i.e. kind of the doctors, right? And mostly I handle stuff and I do, there's kind of a lot of analogy here. I do a lot of that work, but we do have, especially men, you know, older folks, they come in and they want to know, are you an actual librarian? Can you actually, do you actually know what you're talking about? So I'm kind of used to that attitude, you know?
Which, what I want to say to those people is, well, what qualifications are you looking for?
And that's what I say sometimes. What is it you're looking for?
Because really, can you please tell me what education is involved in becoming a librarian? I don't have any fucking idea. I don't know. I do know that there are lots of different kinds of librarians. Like, are you doing artifact restoration? Doing community outreach in, a public library? Like, tell me what you want.
Right.
Do you want someone to rebind your 400-year-old book? Or are you looking for something in the fucking card catalog?
Are you just having trouble getting an ebook? Because I can help you with that. Why don't you show me what you're doing and let's take a look?
I want to walk a fine line here because it's not to minimize the training and education people receive, but also I can tell you after, as a nursing assistant of 10 or 11 years working neuro, burn, respiratory, ICU, like even though I wasn't the nurse, do you know how many skills I was able to pass on the first try in nursing school? Because I had seen the nurse do it 758 million times. I know how to do this because I've watched
it. If there were a job class in between nursing assistant and nurse, that would have been your job class. Because you know what I mean? You weren't, not to kind of reinforce hierarchical thinking, but you weren't, you had, by osmosis, you had absorbed so much information and so many kind of practical things.
And the other thing is that if we're going to talk about nursing assistants, patient care techs, whatever the term is at the hospital or facility you work at, sometimes, like in the emergency room at my hospital, our nursing assistants are doing blood draws and doing EKGs. But if you were to go to another part of the hospital, a nursing assistant would never have any idea how to draw blood or would dare to do it. And then, on neuro, we were like setting up feedings. We were doing personal cares completely. I would bathe myself and another nursing assistant would do a total soap and water bath for a patient with a trach, a ventric, which the nurse would come lock for us so that we could, put their head a bed down. But like we were doing tasks that are very high skill level. So it just depends on where you're working and what you're doing.
Right.
In some cases, a nursing assistant is not going to be, the person to help you out. And in other cases, your nursing assistant, for all you know, is in their final semester of nursing school, like I was. And I would have patients that would say to me while I was doing things in their room, they would say, oh, are you my nurse? And I would say, no, I'm your nursing assistant. Your nurse will be in and just, it would be like shift change or whatever. They hadn't met the nurse yet.
Yeah.
So they would say, huh, that's funny. You look like a nurse.
Yeah.
It's because not just because I wear scrubs, but because I know my way around the room. I can answer some questions. I know my boundaries.
Yeah.
And so I think that
you also don't look scared shitless.
But that's not to say I've seen, some of the women that I went to school with, because I happen to go to school with women, not just whatever. I don't have to qualify everything I say to not piss off.
There were no men in your program?
In the final semesters of my, I went through the evening and weekend program. So by the time I reached my third semester, there was only like 8 of us. And by the time I reached my final semester, there were 5 of us. The day program was much larger. Mm-hmm. But when I talk about the people I graduate with, I'm talking about literally like 5 to 10 other people.
Yeah. But it was all women.
Yes, as we got mm-hmm. towards the end of the program, yeah. it was all women. However, there were men in other cohorts right. that were attending classes at the same time. It just so happened that my class didn't have any dudes in it.
I just went to an info session at a private yeah. school in the Twin Cities here for an elementary master's. So for people who already have their bachelor's degree, they go through kind of the RN stuff, and then they do a little bit more graduate education on top of that. And this is just, yeah. that's what we have in our metro area. There aren't any accelerated BSNs or, you know, that kind of thing for people who already have a degree. To get an associate's degree from the community college and then go RN to BSN, because that's how you can get a job here. They don't hire any RN non-BSNs as new grads at hospitals here. So you just have to like have a BSN to get a job. Anyway, those take longer than the graduate degrees. So most people who already have a bachelor's degree are generally pushed towards those programs. And there's 3 of them in Minneapolis, St. Paul. So anyway, but I went to a graduate session, an info session, and the ratio of the last year's cohort was 30 women and 2 men.
Mm-hmm.
Which blew my mind. I really thought that was even quite radical.
It is. I will say this. I will say that there are a lot more men in nursing than ever before. Mm-hmm. And just from my presence on Twitter and yeah. where I work, I can think, as you were talking, I just quickly in my head made a list. I can think of at least 15 male nurses that I mm-hmm. work with or have worked with mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. that are members of the community. Mm-hmm. And amazing nurses.
Sure.
And they have their own set of challenges. But one of them, who I consider to be a good friend as well as a great nurse, said to me once, "I'm pretty sure the reason I got a spot in this program was because I was a dude."
Sure. Right.
Yeah. And however you feel about that, like, we don't need to get into that. However, I think that more and more men are going into nursing, mm-hmm. but I find not as a hard and fast rule, but like when I went through orientation at the hospital I work at now, there were a lot of men mm-hmm. in our group. A lot of them were working department or ICU or things that you would typically think of as more like adrenaline fueled, for lack of a better way of describing it. But I don't think that's a hard and fast rule to see more men in nursing mm-hmm. because nursing needs more bodies, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But also because I think men bring a lot to the table. Some people hold hard and fast to the notion that men are not empathetic enough or compassionate enough. I think it's bullshit. Yeah. I think that even men who are not super emotional, touchy-feely guys are still really amazing nurses.
We don't always get to choose our caregivers, you know, but I think, I hope this doesn't sound really like conservative or something, but I often think that we get better care when we get care from people who are like us. And so I often choose, women care providers, you know, whether that's like my OBGYN or my general nurse practitioner, you know, whatever it is. And so I think, you know, if we don't have any male nurses, I think there's a lot of male patients who might suffer from that a little bit. I agree. I also think beyond that, because I'm not too terribly concerned with men these days. It's been a rough year. you can edit that out if you want.
I also
think that the less gendered a job becomes in either direction, the better it is for everybody. The more respect a female nurse is going to get on the floor, the more respect a female doctor is going to get on the floor, because people won't automatically assume she's a nurse and not a doctor.
Exactly.
Not to say that doctors deserve more respect than nurses, but we all know how gender, you know, impacts our interactions with people. People think women aren't mm-hmm. competent. So the less gendered that job becomes, that's a great impact on masculinity. That broadens ideas about masculinity. It broadens ideas about what men can do. It broadens ideas about what what caretaking really looks like. Caretaking is not fundamentally just a feminine thing.
No, absolutely.
And so, yeah, broadening that all is good. And if that means a couple dudes get in who had a worse GPA than me, I guess I can live with it.
Yeah, and, you know.
Because people have to go to nursing school. That's just the thing. People have to get in, you know, to this bottleneck of an issue that we have, and they have to get educated, and they have to go then do this job. It's important.
And I think that there is such a varied need, that there's no one type of person that needs to approach this field. I think that there are a lot of places for people of all gender identities. And it's true. I think, do best with people who are like us. And so we need to have our care teams reflect our patient populations.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
You live in, you know, it's like the idea of like, I don't know exact statistics, but statistically, people who, have different gender identities or mm-hmm. different languages mm-hmm. care because of the way they're treated by their care providers.
In people of color.
And that's what I mean. Like people of color, people of different ethnic or cultural backgrounds,
right.
Pretty much
language barriers,
anyone.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like you have this idea of like the old white male doctor,
right.
Less likely to go see that person if you think that person has zero idea of what your paradigm is like. They don't understand your needs. That's why when I worked at Nima Golden Clinic years ago, we used to do, it started out and it progressed.
And you should say what the Emma Goldman Clinic, because not all listeners are from Iowa City.
Okay, so the Emma Goldman
Clinic. I listen to a lot of Fresh Air on NPR, so I just know what radio shows are doing halfway through.
This is really important. I still am operating on the idea that most of the people that listen to my show are people that know me. Like my audience is comprised of like the 15 people that I work with. Kind enough to tune in. So the Emma Goldman Clinic is a nonprofit feminist healthcare clinic here in Iowa City. They've been in operation since Roe v. Wade.
And it was the first, I think it was the first abortion care clinic west of the Mississippi.
Yes, that is true.
I think in the Midwest, you know, founded in what, like 71 even? No. It was post-Roe. Was it post-Roe?
It was like 73, I think, that they opened up. And they started in a small house in Iowa City. They've had a few different locations. But essentially, they exist in the community, not only as an abortion provider, mm-hmm. but they do everything from that to well woman gynecology, birth mm-hmm. control, male screenings, yes. STDs, walk-in pregnancy tests.
Right in kind of the center of kind of university life. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so I worked there. I got a job there when I was 18 years old. I had come fresh out of Catholic high school, knew that I thought people should. Well, here's the thing. I was the girl sitting in Catholic high school with my friend Brigitte, who's actually visited me in adulthood. We had a grand time. I don't know if she'll ever hear this, but if she does, hello. I remember her and I sitting through our vocations class. And I don't want to shit talk my Catholic upbringing, because there are things about it that I'm a wonderful person. But senior year of high school, we had a whole class that taught us you have three choices when you graduate. You can remain celibate, mm-hmm. join the clergy, and the end.
Mm-hmm.
You can remain single, remain celibate, and the end. Or three, you can get married, get to have sex, but really you're just going to pop out babies for the rest of your life.
You're going to be miserable immediately. Yeah.
Yes. You're immediately going to have hemorrhoids, and you're never.
You're immediately going to suffer the wrath of God for having sex.
Yes. So basically, those were our choices, and I remember Brigitte and I being like the little hellions that were writing essays about like quoting feminists and being like, "That my body autonomy is granted to me by God. God told me." That I have the right. Yeah,
the divine feminine includes mifepristone.
So basically, I came, this was the child that I was, but I was coming out of Catholic high school, got a job at the Emma Goldman Clinic, was taught the basics of feminist healthcare, which in my mind is patient-centered care. That's what it is. Yep. They taught us things like, when you meet your patient, you don't meet your patient when her feet are up in the fucking stirrups, which God forbid I should ever use that phrase again. Yep. But you don't meet her when she's laying down with her vag up in the air. Mm-hmm. You meet her at eye level and you introduce yourself.
That's right.
Because this is a human being that you're talking to. You're not mm-hmm. just going to rush in, swab her cervix, out the door. Like mm-hmm. you don't get to do that shit. Mm-hmm. So I got the basics of like how you talk to people, how you put the patient first, and you remember that first and foremost, they're a human being with real concerns and shit that you can't even figure out in the amount of time you have to work with them. So you need to trust that they know what's going on in their own heads and hearts.
Totally.
So anyway, for a long time.
And shout out to Emma Goldman Clinic. I had some great care there.
I did too.
I saw a great nurse practitioner there who was a woman. Well, I think she's a woman. I don't know how she identifies, but I got some great birth control care there. So thank you, Emma Goldman. You rule.
Yeah, I mean, I
send them money, everybody.
I can't think how many different ways they saved me. And you know, maybe that was my first foray in healthcare, which I keep forgetting about that because there was like a long number of years that went me leaving the clinic and me actually starting to work in healthcare again.
Yeah.
But it's true. I was very much doing healthcare there. I was basically lay patient healthcare. Advocacy. I did STI and birth control counseling on a walk-in basis. Like I was the one stocking the condoms. Anyway, there was a million things that I learned how to do there. And I got to be around people that are not like me for the first mm-hmm. time.
Yep.
And I think that in nursing, that's really important because mm-hmm. you're not advocating for what they want or for what mm-hmm. you want. Yeah, it's not about them. You're advocating for what they want and you need to understand what.
Yeah.
So like some nurses, I don't do it all the time. I do it some of the time. I do it especially when the patient's upset. I'll say like, what is the most important thing to you right now for the next 12 hours of my shift that I have control over?
Exactly.
And I think that it kind of comes back full. Did you just break a glass?
Nope.
Oh, good. It sounded like glass breaking. I was like, oh no, don't cut yourself.
Nope.
But yeah, I think
I'm impressed that you can hear that though. Your headset must be something.
I upgraded somewhere around episode 9. Hey.
Good job.
Everyone can hear my horribly coarse voice in such clarity.
It actually sounds better now that you've been talking for a while.
Good.
I don't know how that works.
I warmed up a little bit and I haven't had anything to drink, so maybe.
That's a shame.
Maybe. Actually, I'm going to unplug my computer and I'm going to actually take you with me.
Okay.
And we're going to go refill my cup.
Okay. Or we can take a break because I also need to.
Do you want
to
take a break?
I'm also going to go to the kitchen, but I guess I could just take my computer there as well.
Up to you, baby.
I'll meet you back here.
Tell you what, let's all meet back in 1 week. We'll continue this conversation and there is so much more to talk about. Allison will get her stuff from the kitchen. I'll get my stuff from the kitchen. We'll settle back in on the couch. We hope you'll join us. Here at MedRoom Chronicles, we may be uncensored, but we are not unfiltered. Protected health information has been changed and concealed to comply with HIPAA of 1996. The things we talk about are combinations of years of experience with thousands of patients, things we've read, stories we've heard. If you think we're talking about you, trust me, we're not. Also, we're real nurses here to provide accurate and helpful info, but don't take us as fact without doing your own research. Refer to your state's Board of Nursing, Practice Acts, and your institution's policies and procedures if you have questions about your practice. Lastly, our very strong opinions are ours alone and do not reflect those of our employers or educational institutions. Thanks for listening and happy nursing, guys.